Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Lamed Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 12 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Vov. On the side of the Gemara, you'll notice we have a nosei, a topic heading that we've written in, and it reads, Dinoi Shel Rabbi Yochanan. We'll be featuring Rabbi Yochanan's law, Hakol Tzrichim Das Habaylim, Bakrovas Korbonam, Chutzmi Mechusrei Kapora. This is a point that we dwelt on in our last shiur, so if you are familiar with our previous shiur, this will be quite familiar, and that is that in the offering of sacrifices, we require the awareness of the owner of the sacrifice, with the exception of sacrifices that are for the Mechusrei Kapora. We spent a lot of time in our previous shiur defining Mechusrei Kapora, so we're not going to repeat all of that again. Just very briefly, it has to do with those sacrifices that are brought not as a result of sins having been committed, but rather as a result of a period of defilement. And the bringing of the Korbonos and represents the end of that defilement period, and hence the owner now being able to resume the consumption of sacrificial meat. The Gemara. Gufa. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Tzrichim Das, with regard to the offering of all sacrifices, you need awareness. Awareness of the owner, that his sacrifice is being offered. Chutz mi mechusur kapora, with the exception of those types of sacrifices that are in the category of mechusur kapora. And we have some markings that we introduce on the side under the Mivneh heading. The diamonds are hoichachois lahalochas hamuvois b'malach ha-gemar. These are proofs to the various halochas that are featured and as the sukkah goes on. So what follows the diamond are proofs to whatever is being said. We'll also have a house marking that represents a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take style Gemara, the top facing up, the point facing upwards, kushyos Rabbi Yochanan. There'll be challenges to Rabbi Yochanan. The inverted shape will represent tshuvos avur Rabbi Yochanan, points of defense for Rabbi Yochanan. The double underline, you can see, is used to highlight a repeating expression, Alma on Rabbi Lozer. So the Gemara will be asking, so why does Rabbi Lozer say whatever he says? Hakushyos shenishal Rabbi Yochanan, the questions that will be asked on Rabbi Yochanan, mevusasois al halhilchosov shel Rabbi Lozer, are based on laws that were taught by Rabbi Lozer. So now, with that introduction aside, we continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan just said that all sacrifices need owner awareness, except for the realm of sacrifices that constitute mechusrei kapora. And now, proof to that: sharei odomevi korban albona vial benoisov haketanim. A father can bring sacrifices for his children that are minors. Minors do not have das; they're not considered people having awareness in halachic terms. So that shows that when it comes to the issue of Mechusrei Kapora, if his children had experienced that type of defilement that requires the bringing of Korbonos, the father brings on their behalf the required sacrifices. The Gemara asks, Ela Me'ata, well, if you're using that as your basis or proof that no das is required, though, so then Yovi Odom Chatos Chelev Al Chavero. If a person had eaten forbidden fats from an animal, those forbidden fats are called chelev. one who eats chalev unwittingly, b'shogeg, he has to bring a sacrifice. And this is a, we'll call this a sin-related sacrifice. That's not in the realm of mechusar kapara, sin-based sacrifice. And we're suggesting something now which we know is not the case, but that a person should be able to bring a sin offering on behalf of his friend without the friend's knowledge. Shekain, and the precedent is Shekain Odom Mevi Al Ishto Shaita Krib Yudah. We know that a man can bring a sacrifice for his wife that became an imbecile. Let us say she had given birth and that necessitates the bringing of a sacrifice. Now, the wife is an imbecile, so she has no awareness, and yet the husband brings the sacrifice on her behalf. So she has no awareness. So too, let a person bring a sin offering on behalf of his friend without his friend's knowledge. And we know that's not allowed. Aloma om Rabbi Elazar. Why then does Rabbi Elazar say, Hifrish chatas chelev al chavero lo osa klum? That if a person sets aside, dedicates a sin offering on behalf of his friend, he has done nothing. It's ineffective. The Gemara responds and says, Ishto shoita hefi domi. The issue of the imbecilic wife, what are the circumstances? I made a slight error before. I made reference to the wife having given birth, but that's not what the Gemara is focusing on. So here the Gemara sets the record straight. What's the case of the imbecilic wife? If she ate the chelev when she was of no sound mind, there is no korban required to begin with. If she ate it when she was of sound mind, and the husband set aside a sacrifice on her behalf, and then she lost her mind, well, a person who would consume chalev, set aside a sacrifice, and then lost their mind, the chozer v'nishtat apostle. And even if they recovered afterwards, that sacrifice is of no validity. It's rendered unfit. Since during the interim period being a shoite, the sacrifice has no purpose, it's cast away, and once it's cast away from usefulness, it's of no value. So that if we just take note of the structure of the Gemara, there had been a suggestion of bringing a chatas chelev for one's friend without their knowledge, and then that was based on a person bringing a korban for his wife that's a shoita. I should point out what we mentioned before of a type of error. I'd like to just go back and say it's not necessarily an error, because what the Gemara was doing, it quoted the idea of bringing a korban for one's wife based on Rabbi Yehuda. I should have made mention of the Gemara on Daf Lamed Hey Omid Beis, where we saw Rabbi Yehuda quoted, and that was in the context of a woman who had given birth, the husband bringing the sacrifices that his wife requires, and that includes korbanos that his wife needs to bring, even in, as well, including the case where she would have given birth. So the Gemara demonstrated here how there was no question to begin with, because the bringing of a korban on behalf of one's wife, parallel to the suggestion of bringing a korban on behalf of someone that ate chelev, well, that just doesn't exist. There is no case of an ishtoi shoita, of a man's wife who's an imbecile, for whom a chatas chelev would be brought to begin with. So there's no basis for the suggestion of bringing a chatas chelev on behalf of one's friend. So with that in mind, the Rabbi Yochanan original halacha stands that when it comes to korbanos that are mechusar kapara, a person can bring the korban even without the party's awareness. The Gemara continues with a new question. Elo me'ata yavi adam pesach al chavero. Let it be that a person can offer a korban pesach on behalf of his friend without the friend's knowledge. And the precedent for that is shekin adam mevi al bonav val benoisav haktanim. A person offers a korban pesach on behalf of his children that are minors, and again, as we said before, minors do not have awareness. Alomam Rabbi Elazar. So why does Rabbi Elazar say hifrish pesach hachaveru lo osa klum? The person who dedicates a korban pesach on behalf of his friend, it is of no value. So the Gemara answers, Omar Rabbi Zera, said lebeis avos. That pasuk, which is the basis of a man bringing sacrifices on behalf of his children, lav d'oraisa. It's not a Torah concept. It's not a d'oraisa concept. We'll call it a rabbinic level idea. It's not a Torah-based idea. So once again, we see that the basis of asking the question, which we featured in the diamond here, is really not a source from which to ask a question to begin with. And what the Gemara does now is we have a long point which we call we see the Dalid marking, it's a Dechi, a long rejection of the suggestion. So what the Gemara, as we say, is going to show that the idea of a father dedicating a Korban Pesach or bringing it on behalf of his minor children is not something that the Torah expects of us in the first place. Umimai. And how do you know that it's not Doraisa? Midisnan, from the following source. Ha'imir Lubonov, a man, a father says to his children, Hareini Sheikhid is a Pesach, Amishiale Mikem Rishon Yerushalayim. I am slaughtering this Korban Pesach on behalf of he who comes first into Yerushalayim. So that the father is announcing that the son or daughter that enters first into Yerushalayim, that enters first Yerushalayim, will be a beneficiary of this Korban Pesach that he's slaughtering now. Kevan Shichnis Risha in Roshe V'Rubo, the first child to enter head and most of body into the gates of Jerusalem, Zocha B'chelkai, he gains his portion in the Pesach, and as a result of his gaining his own portion, Umezakis Echavimo, he enables his other siblings to merit a portion as well. V'i Amris Selebes Ovas Doraisa, if you were to maintain this idea that a man's children are to be appointed to the Korban Pesach on a Torah level, this appointment couldn't work because the appointment to the Korban Pesach takes place only prior to it being slaughtered. In this case, the appointment is going to be taking place after it has been slaughtered, as we see in the language of the father. Al bisra koyu mezakilu, it's already in meat form. Could it possibly be that that one child who enters first acquires a portion in the Pesach and then benefits the others as well? It's too late in the formal laws of appointment to participate in a Korban Pesach. And nevertheless, the source indicated that the first one to enter gains a portion in the Pesach and his siblings along with him. All right, that's true, but that's because there was no Torah need in the first place for him to be appointed, because as being a member of a minor who's a member of his father's family, he's entitled to participate in the eating of the Korban Pesach even without formal appointment. We're presenting this Gemara, making an assumption that the listener is already familiar with the laws of appointment to a Korban Pesach. I know that that is maybe expecting a bit too much, but we don't really have to dwell on that aspect. All we have to point out is that the idea of a man's children that are minors as being appointed to the Korban Pesach is not a Torah concept. They're automatically permitted to eat a Korban Pesach that their father brings. The Meforshim here, the Ran, elaborates on that point. So the Gemara asks, "Elolomalu de Omar lahonavun." So then, if that's all true, that the children would have eaten from the Korban Pesach that he brings anyway, so why did he make this announcement to them? Answer: Kedei lazarzen b'mitzvahs, in order to create a sense of diligence in the performance of mitzvahs. He, as you could, as he said, he made a type of race: who's going to get there first, in order to show how mitzvah performance requires diligence. Tanyo nami hochi. The following brisa bears this point out, that the whole speech of the father to his children was Kedei Lazarzon Maise Hoya. An incident took place, V'kidmu bonus lebonim, the girls were swifter than the boys, V'nimsu bonus rizos ubonim shvelim, resulting in the daughters being the diligent ones and the sons being lackadaisical, relatively speaking. The Rashi explains, Tanya nami hochi, kedei lazarzen komar, midikomar bonim shvelim. The expression was that the sons were shvelim, were weaker, or they were lackadaisical relative to the bonos. The lo komar, it doesn't say in the source, ubonim lo yotsu yedei chayvason, it doesn't say that the children don't fulfill their requirement. That indicates to us that this choice of language of the Brisa, that the children were not obligated in the first place on a Torah level, and that the whole ceremony here, the whole deal, was simply to educate the children in the in diligence that's required for mitzvah performance. So once again, what we saw in this section, as we saw before, there was an attempt to question Rabbi Yochanan's principle, where he had a precedent for his principle, and we demonstrated that the question doesn't even get off the ground, because the precedent for the question was unjustified. The Gemara continues, V'torim es trumoisov v'chule. Again, we're dealing with the Mudar Hana, and the Mishnah said that even though A told Mr. B, I don't want you to benefit from me, Mr. A can nevertheless tithe his truma tithe. On the top of Omid Beis, where we continue, we have a new marking. A bow tie shape appears on the side of the Gemara under the Nosei Mivneh heading. The bow tie represents Shtei She'elois Be'inyan Haturim Mishelo Al Shel Chavero. Mr. A is using his own untithed produce to serve as a tithe for his friend's produce. So Mr. A is tithing on behalf of Mr. B, using his own produce to benefit his friend. So that's the, we'll say, the environment in which these questions are being presented. Number one, Tzorach Daito Oiloi, to require his awareness that the tithing is going to take place or not. And the second issue is Toivas Hano Shel Mi. The concept of Toivas Hano is what will be presented in the second question. We'll hold off on offering any explanation for now. We'll wait for the question in the middle of the Omid. As the after the question is presented, you'll notice triangles that appear. They are shlavei birur. They are stages in clarifying mishel mi hatavua shel hafrosha, whose grains are being used for the tithing. And a double underline will also be used to highlight the question of Ulidaito Daman, Srichim Lefaresh Hadikotani Lidaito. In the Tanaic source that would be quoted in the Gemara, the word Lidaito, with his awareness, appears. And as we've pointed out so many times, in learning the Gemara, we call it the pronoun problem. A pronoun is used, and it is oftentimes the subject of inquiry. Who is being referred to? The Gemara at the top. Ibayaloho hatorei mishelo al shochaveroi tzorech daitoi oiloi. If A is tithing on behalf of B, do you need his awareness or not? Mi amrinon, and the Gemara presents two sides of analysis. Mi amrinon kivon dezechus huloi lo tzorech das. Since Mr. B is going to benefit from Mr. A's action of tithing, it's a schus, it's a merit, it's a benefit for him. You don't need his approval. There's a concept known as zochen l'odom shelo b'fonav, that I'm allowed to cause you benefit even without your awareness. Oy dilma, or possibly mitzvah delay he. It's his mitzvah. We're speaking about Mr. A tithing on behalf of Mr. B, but it's Mr. B's grains that need to be tithed. It's his mitzvah. V'nichole l'mevde. It might be something that he would prefer doing himself. So that if I am going to come along to take away his mitzvah, well, I definitely would need his awareness, his approval beforehand. Ta shma. Notice we have a long marking. This is an attempt to prove one direction. And then, after the long marking, you'll see there's another triangle, which in effect is a reversal of what we're trying to say. So these are all stages in trying to explain the following source. It's our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, when you're dealing with Mudar Hanome Chavero, A said to B, I don't want you to derive any benefit from me. It says, Torei mes trumosov, yes masrosov, ledaito. He can, and we're going to use pronouns now, which we, in Gemara markings, we try to avoid at all costs, but the nature of this Gemara is that the pronouns are the subject of clarification in the Gemara. So we say that the madir, the one who initiated the vow, is allowed to tithe the other fellow's tithes ledaito with his awareness. But my askinon ilemo mishel bal hakri al bal hakri. If the circumstances here involve, again, we have Mr. A made the vow, and he's going to be tithing on behalf of Mr. B. But if you're going to say that Mr. A is taking Mr. B's untithed grains, Balakri is the owner of the pile of grain that needs tithing. And Michel Balakri means take from his grains, take from Mr. B's grains, and set aside some of them on behalf of Mr. B. Uladaito deman, and in the source it spoke about his awareness. Ilemo ladaito delay. If you're to think it means that the Mr. A, who is doing the action of mafresh, he's being mafresh or torein, he's doing the action of tithing. So that, what are we describing here? Mr. A comes along with of course he is aware of what he's doing, and ties Mr. B's grains using Mr. B's own grains for the tithing. Man Shavya Shalia, who made Mr. A an agent. We didn't mention this before, but it's a cardinal rule with regard to tithing that if someone other than the owner is going to do the tithing, there has to be formal shlichus, formal agency, an appointment of someone to serve as an agent for tithing. Someone can't just pop out of the blue and go to your grains and set aside some as truma, dedicated as truma and meiser, without being appointed to do thusly. So if you're going to say that the source is describing shel balakri al balakri, and the da'ato referred to as the one who's doing the tithing, there was no shlichus appointment. Elo ledaito de bal hakri. So we'll suggest that it's a reference to the awareness of the owner of the grains that need tithing. So if it's ledaita de bal hakri, that would mean that Mr. A, who initiated the vow, is formally appointed as a shaliach. Ah, but that can't be the case. Mr. A initiated a vow. He can't now grant benefit to Mr. B, and by cooperating, by executing the agency, he is giving benefit to Mr. B. He's doing Mr. B's will. So we have to still explain the source, the Mishnah, Ella. What are the circumstances of the Mishnah? Elo, Misheloi al shel balakri. Mr. A is going to be using his own untithed grains to serve as a tithe for Mr. B's grain. Uladaito deman. The source said that this tithing can take place with his awareness. Whose awareness? Ilema uladaito de balakri. If you're talking about the awareness of the owner of the grains that need to be tithed, Hokomahanilei. Well, then Mr. A is in effect doing the will of Mr. B, causing Mr. B to enjoy, to benefit from that. From the knowledge that Mr. A is doing the shlichus, but Mr. B is not allowed to benefit from Mr. A. That's the Mishnah. Elo lav ledaite denafshe. So rather, what is happening? Mr. A is taking his own grain and using it to tithe Mr. B's pile of untithed grain. And that's what the Mishnah says you're allowed to do. Now, we have an angular brackets here. The Ran claims that this is really extra language, so we don't need to read it. And so skipping the angular brackets, Elo Lav, the result then of this is Ein Tzorich Das. Remember the original question? The original question was, if Mr. A is going to use his own untithed grains to serve as the tithe on behalf of Mr. B, do you need Mr. B's awareness? You see from here, no, you don't need Mr. B's awareness. If I were coming along and using Mr. B's grains for the tithe, I can't pop out of nowhere. You need to have shlichus. However, I'm not tithing for Mr. B. I'm not separating from Mr. B's grains. I'm using my own grains to benefit Mr. B and thereby exempt him from further tithing. So this would be a conclusion. Namely, you don't need you don't need the das, you don't need the awareness of the owner. Le'olam, the Gemara rejects this and says, Le'olam Mishel Baal Akri Al Baal Akri. Now, when we presented this before, we said, is that, and in order for that to work, we said that you need to have the das of the Baal Akri in order for there to be agency. And then we said that couldn't possibly be the case of the Mishnah because you would be in violation of the vow. If A works as the agent of Mr. B, he's benefiting Mr. B, and he's not allowed to benefit Mr. B in accordance with the vow. So Gemara says, I have a way around that. We have what we call, you can have your cake and eat it too. We can have a form of agency. In other words, we'll create a license for Mr. A to tithe Mr. B's grains using B's grains, and at the same time not be in violation of the vow. How is that? Kidoma Rava, based on Rava's teaching, be Oimer, Kol Haroitza Litram Yavovi. Rava said this in a different context, where it's sufficient if the owner of the grains that needs tithing announces, anyone who wants to come along and tithe can come along, I give them a right to tithe. It's not a specific appointment of agency. It's not that B is pointing to Mr. A, you be my agent, but rather giving general license to anyone who wants to come and perform the tithe, they can come and do it. That's enough as far as shlichus is concerned. However, as far as creating hanah in B having the pleasure that A is carrying out his will and fulfilling his agency, that isn't the case over here, because anyone else could have done it as well. So the Gemara says, just like Rava used this concept in a different context, Hachanami, so to over here, Bi'oimer v'chule, meaning Bi'oimer koloroitze litrom yovo vitrom, and we have then a case of agency sufficient enough for the tithing to take place, and not so, let's say, focused in agency, which would have resulted in a violation of the vow. But what we have to emphasize at this point is that with this description of the Tanaic source, we don't have an answer to the question. The original question was, what is the din of A using A's grains to exempt Mr. B's pile? That's not what the Mishnah, though, was talking about, so we can't say that we have an answer to the original question. Bo minei Rabbi Yirmiyo mi Rabbi Zera, hatori mishalo ashel chavero. Similar scenario, A is using his own grains to exempt the grains of Mr. B. Toivas hano shel mi. Rashi, toivas hano shel mi. Notice that Rashi is just across from here. He says, oisa pruta shiocho lekabo miyisrael acher kidei shiitna, kidei litna leben bita kayeng mishel mi hi. I am going to be separating a tithe, and the tithe is given to a kohen. Imagine someone comes along to me and says, hey, I see that you have some grains that you're dedicating as truma and you're going to give it to a kohen. I would like you to give it to my grandson. My daughter married a kohen, so I, though I'm a Yisrael, my grandson is a kohen because his father's a kohen. Give your tithe to my grandson. So I say to this guy coming along with this request, and what's there in it for me? So he says, oh, here, take a pruta, means take a coin, take this from me, a little, some kind of a nominal amount of money, and in exchange for that, give it to my grandson. What we just described is toivas hanah. The profit that you can make in giving your tithe to a specific kohen as per a request in exchange for my acquiescing to his request, I can make money from that. I'm allowed to get paid for that. We're not talking about selling the truma, that you can't do, but we're talking about the value in benefiting a specific kohen. What is that value? That particular value is called toivas hanah. So Rav Yirmiya asks Rav Zera, when Mr. A is using his own grains to exempt the grains of Mr. B, and someone comes along with the request that we just saw in Rashi, hey, give the tithe to my grandson, and I'll pay you money for that. I'll pay you money for your agreeing to my request. Who of the two people, Mr. A or Mr. B, is entitled to that money, to that profit? And now the Gemara presents two sides of the question. Mi amrinon, do we say ilav peri dehech, if not for the grains of the one actively doing the tithe, mi misatno karyadahu, the other guy's pile, Mr. B's pile, wouldn't be tithed. So that the essential player over here is Mr. A, who's using his grains to benefit Mr. B, so that the Tevas Hanoah should be paid to Mr. A. Oy Dilma, or possibly Ilav Karyo Dehahu, if not for the fact there's a pile of grain that needs to be tithed, Lohavian Peri Dehodain Truma. Mr. A's grains that are being used to serve as Truma would have no Truma identity. They're only Truma because there's Mr. B's pile that needs to be tithed. Omar Lay, Omar Kro, Rabbi Zera responds with a posuk. The posuk says, "Es kol tvuas zarachov inosata." Without getting into the actual scriptural analysis, Rashi points out from the fact that it says zarachov inosata, we learn that the tevas hanah, that value, is due to the Baal HaKri, too. In our example, Mr. B, the owner of the pile that needs to be tithed. Esvei, Toreim, this is again a quote from our Mishnah. The background to our Mishnah had been a neder was imposed. One was Madir Es Chavero. Mr. A declared that Mr. B is to derive no benefit from him. So in our mission it said, Toreim es trumoisov es masroisov ledaito. Even though Mr. A imposed hanor restriction on Mr. B, Mr. A is allowed to tithe Mr. B's produce. The e amris tevesano de bala kri, if you're going to say that the tevesano value is to be paid to Mr. B, the owner of the pile of grain that needed to be tithed. Hokomahanile. So the Mr. A, in separating the tithe, is then causing benefit to Mr. B. Because Mr. B, when Mr. A is requested to deliver the Truma tithe to so-and-so's grandson in exchange for a payment, if you're going to tell me, like Rabbi Zero says, the payment goes to Mr. B, well then Mr. A is benefiting Mr. B. Eloshma mino, toivasano delay. So we have to conclude that the toivasano payment is paid to the mafresh, to the one who's doing the tithing. Amri lo. Now here we have a new, the marking that we started before. We continue, we didn't mention, but we have it on the side, we feature under the Mivneh, the volcano shape with the narrow part facing up is a makav. Keep track of the back and forth style regarding Tevas Hanah, is it Shel Bala Kri, and the inverted shape has, it belongs to the mafresh, the one who's doing the tithing. The Gemara continues and says, you can't conclude the issue of, namely, Rabbi Zeiro's question, you can't challenge Rabbi Zeiro's question from the case of the Mishnah. Amri lo. The Mishnah was Michel Balakri al Shel Balakri uledaito de Balakri. The Mishnah's case was not like we thought. We thought that the Mishnah spoke about Mr. A using his own grains to exempt the grains of Mr. B, as per the original question. But that's not the case of the Mishnah. But rather, it's the case of the Mishnah is that A is coming to Mr. B's pile of grain, separating some of Mr. B's own grains, dedicating it as a tithe, and you'll ask, well, what about the problem of the hanah that Mr. A is giving Mr. B in functioning as his agent? As we explained earlier, through that, well, that general announcement, which serves to be the equivalent of establishing agency, without Mr. A directly benefiting Mr. B, as he was not appointed a specific agent. Anyone else could have done it as well. Toshma. So again, the Gemara tries to resolve the question in a definitive fashion. And you can see we have an inverted volcano shape that will indicate that the conclusion will be that the Toivas Hanoah payment that Rabbi Yirmiyahu was asking about, the Toivas Hanoah payment goes to the Mafrish, to the one who's volunteering his own grains as Truma on behalf of his friend. In the course of this Gemara, you notice there's a bracketed section. There are 3 points that are taught here. We need, for our Gemara, only point number 3. So let us not preoccupy ourselves with too much explanation regarding points 1 and 2. They're brought here simply because of a full quote of Rabbi Yochanan's teaching, but only point 3 is necessary for our sugya. The Gemara. Toshma, Yomar Rabbi Avo, Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Notice if we skip the brackets momentarily, the Hatoire Mishaloi al She'eno Shelo, if Mr. A is using his grains to exempt someone else's grains, Tova Sanoa Shelo, the Tova Sanoa payment is due to the one who's doing the Hafrosha. And that would answer Rabbi Yirmiyahu's original question of Rabbi Zera, who gets the Tova Sanoa? Is it the Toreim or the Mafrish? Does he get it? Or does the Baal HaKri get it? And the answer is the Mafrish gets it, the one who's doing the tithing. Let's go over the bracketed section. Point 1, Hamakdish Moisif Chomesh. When an item is dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash and it needs to be redeemed, if the original owner that sanctified it is coming to redeem it, he has to pay the Beis HaMikdash the principal value and add a fifth. If an outsider comes to redeem the item that was dedicated, he pays the principal value, but does not need to add a fifth. Number 2, Miskaper Oisa Tmura. If Mr. A set aside a korban on behalf of Mr. B. Mr. B is called the Miskaper. He's the one that's going to benefit from the atonement afforded by this animal. Before the animal is processed as a sacrifice, It was dedicated to serve as a sacrifice. Before it's actually slaughtered, there is something called tmura. Tmura is a replication of the sanctity of that particular animal onto another animal. It's not something that one is actually allowed to do, but if one does it, it is the sanctity is replicated. Who has the power of tmura? So point number 2 is telling us that the miskaper, the beneficiary of the sacrifice, has that power. But just as far as the general sugya is concerned, the second question that was featured here in the middle of the Omid, Rabbi Yirmiyahu's question of Rabbi Zera, concerning Tori Mishalal Shel Chaveru, who benefits from the Toivas Hanoah, who gets that value? The answer is the one who is volunteering his own grains on behalf of his friend. He'll get paid by, as we said before in the example with the grandfather, that grandfather will pay him the Tovas Hanoah as opposed to paying the owner of the pile of grain that requires tithing. Our Mishnah spoke about a Mudur Hanoah Mechavero, and it said, Melamdoi Medrash Halochas Vagonos Avolo Yolamdenu Mikra. The Madir, the one who imposed the vow on his friend, namely whereby the friend cannot benefit from the vow taker. Nevertheless, the vow taker is allowed to teach the other party these areas of Torah learning, Medrash, Halachas, and Agadas, but not simple scripture. On the side, we have a topic heading, Loma b'mudur hanoah mechaveru katoni d'dafka mikro lo yilamdenu, avol Torah shebaal peh mutur lalamdo. Why is it that simple scripture is not allowed to be taught? that would constitute a violation of the vow, but the oral parts of the Torah, namely what we call Torah Shebal Peh, that we call the simple scripture aspects of Torah, one could teach the other party, even though he's not allowed to receive benefit. The Gemara, Mikra Maitai Malo Yilamdenu. Why can't Mr. A, who imposed the vow on Mr. B, why can't Mr. A teach Mikra verses? Mishum Dekomahani Lei. Well, because he's giving him benefit. Well, Medrash Nami Komahani Lei. Be teaching him the Medrash, we call that the oral tradition in explaining the Torah. Isn't that also a granting of pleasure? And wouldn't that be a violation of the vow as well? Omar Shmuel, b'mokim shenoitlim schar al hamikra v'einoitlim schar al hamedrash. The Mishnah is talking about a location where a fee is paid for the teaching of Mikra, but no fee is paid for the teaching of Medrash. And therefore, what the Mishnah is saying, if Mr. A prevents Mr. B from getting benefit, so Mr. A cannot teach Bechinam for nothing, you know, free, gratis. He's not allowed to teach for free Mikra, because if he teaches Mr. B Mikra for free, Mr. B is saving that money that he would have had to pay someone else. Well, that saving, as we said in one of our previous shurim, a penny saved is a penny earned, his saving of the money is then considered receipt of hanoah, of benefit from Mr. A, and he's not allowed to. However, the teaching of Medrash that Mr. B, let's say, is going to receive the Medrash lecture from Mr. A, B doesn't have to pay for that anyway. So he's not saving any money. Look, as far as the absorption of Torah knowledge is concerned, that's not a factor over here in our discussion. The focus is Hanoah. For our purposes right now, we'll simply say that mitzvah lav lehenes nitnu, the fact that one is performing a mitzvah of learning Torah per se, that doesn't come into the category of Hanoah. Even though those of us who learn Torah, many will testify that there's no greater pleasure in the world, but we're talking right now about Hanoah in the context of the vow. So, but the saving of money, that is considered a Hanoah. Therefore, to teach for Mr. A, who imposed a vow on Mr. B, to teach Mikra for free, that would benefit Mr. B financially. Teaching Medrash for free doesn't create any benefit because Mr. B wouldn't have to pay for that anyway. The Gemara asks, "My Pascha." The Rosh on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph deals with this phrase, "My Pascha." He says, and if you have it available, you'll see it on the fifth line of the Rosh commentary there on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. He says, "My Pascha shli oylom noitlim schar ala mikra v'lo ala medrash." From where do you know that payment is always made for Mikra and it's not made for Medrash and not the other way around? The Gemara continues at the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. Ha Komash Malon. The point of the Mishnah is as follows. De'afilu b'mokoyim shenoitlim schar. That even in places that money is paid for, we'll say, for Torah instruction, al hamikro shori lemishkal, al hamedrash lo shori lemishkal, for verse instruction, one is allowed to receive payment. But for the teaching of the oral tradition, the medrash, one is not allowed to receive payment. And therefore, since in general it's allowed for payment to be made for Mikra, the Madir, the one who imposed the vow, should not engage in free mikra instruction. That would be in violation of the vow. He would be creating benefit for Mr. B, him saving that money by receiving free instruction that he would have been that he would have paid for, and he would have been allowed to pay for it with regard with someone else. The Rashi at the top line, the Ha Komash Malon Masnisin, our Mishnah says that Afilu B'Mokem Shenovin Schar B'Chulei Ulahachi Lo Yelamenu Mikra. And it's for this reason that the Madi, or the one who imposed the vow, should not teach verses. The Ha'il V'Shoy LeMishkal Schar, since it's one is allowed to get paid for that. Imalamdo B'Chinom Mehanile Minaschar Shoyelo Litein. That is that's imparting benefit to Mr. B, who's not allowed to benefit from Mr. B, from Mr. A. And what is the benefit? He's benefiting in saving that money, that fee that he would have otherwise had to pay. The Gemara asks a question. You'll notice this is a question that lasts a couple of lines. And this also leads us into a new discussion with a topic heading. So on the side you see the Nosei, Be'inyin Hamalami Torah B'schar. Regarding the teaching of Torah for pay, bishar meaning tashlum is payment, mikra, when you have two areas of Torah, number one is mikra, and if you skip a couple lines down, you see number two, Torah Shebal Peh, one is the verses and the other is the oral tradition. Under mikra, there are two possible foundations or bases for the payment. Number Aleph is schar shimur. Simply put, babysitting fee. And Beis, schar pisuk tamim. It's payment for the teaching of the vowelization and the cantillation that you find in Mikra. We turn back to the Gemara. My shno, and again we point out the question lasts a few lines. My shno medrash delo. What's different about medrash that you're not allowed to pay for that? Dichtiv, the pasuk says, "V'oisi tzivo Hashem bo'isahi l'lamed eschem." Moshe Rabbeinu says that I was commanded by God to teach you. Uksiv, rei limadeti eschem chukim mishpotim kasher tzivani Hashem. Behold, I taught you the laws of the Torah as God commanded me. And we darshin ma ani b'chinom afatem nami b'chinom. Well, just like God taught Moshe Rabbeinu for nothing, so too when you teach Torah over, you're supposed to teach it for nothing, b'chinom. Okay, so with that we understand that that medrash must be taught for nothing, for no payment. Well, mikronami b'chinam, let the law say that the teaching of verses shall also be b'chinam, for nothing, without being paid for it. So how is it that the teaching of mikra involves the possibility of paying for that? Two explanations. Rav Amar Schar Shimur. Shimur is a babysitting fee. Young kids, young boys, are generally speaking rambunctious. And in order to keep them at bay, you need an overseer, what we call a babysitter. That's called Schar Shimur. Literally, Shimur is to watch, guard or watch. The payment made when someone is teaching mikra, and it's generally speaking young children that would be learning mikra. Young children don't learn medrash, so that the idea of payment for mikra is really not a payment for the communication of the Torah content per se, but it's a payment for the fact that the one who is teaching is also serving as a babysitter. And one is allowed to get paid as a babysitter. Number two, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Schar Pisuk Ta'amim. The payment made in the study of Mikra, again, is not for the Torah content per se, but in addition to the Torah content, the explanation is also the cantillation. maybe some of you use the word trup, the tune, the vowelization, how to simply read the words. And that one is allowed to pay for. That's not considered a violation of what we said, what we saw before, ma'ani b'chinam, af atem b'chinam. That has to do with the, we'll say, the Torah content, the Torah knowledge. But these additional or auxiliary aspects, one is allowed to get paid for. We are in the context of a Daf Yomi schedule, and you can see we've spilled over already a couple of lines onto the new Daf. We're pausing in the middle of a discussion. We've presented, in the meantime, a Machlokis Rav and Reb Yochanan as to explaining what the basis of paying for Mikra is. As the Gemara continues, we'll be evaluating which opinion is, let's say, the more likely the one to be accepted. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.